Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this Limark technical net. For 43 years now, it's been going strong. We get together at around 8 o'clock every Sunday night in front of our radios to communicate, to exchange ideas, and to learn from each other, to teach each other, and hopefully to entertain each other a little bit. And once again, I thank you all for coming by this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a moment, and then I will give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via mail, that would be either for mailbag questions, if you can't reach us during the technical net, but you still want us to discuss a question you have, or if you have a topic that's in the news that you'd like to share your knowledge about, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them. And also if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at something space or NASA related, you can either contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address is, I'll give you two choices, mailbag@ac2gs.com or roy@limarktech.net. And we keep a link page open 24/7 about interesting articles and YouTube videos that I've seen that week. Also, in addition, I put up an illustration, hopefully the topic of great circles and long paths and short paths will rear their head again this week as it did last week. And this time I have a hopefully useful illustration to provide a better understanding of what's going on. That's available on the link page as well as other interesting articles. You can get there by typing into your browser either roy.ac2gs.com or alternatively links.limarktech.net. We have a chat room available. It's been quiet for weeks now. If you want to give it a try, type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com or chat.limarktech.net. And we also offer an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. It started just as the TechNet audio stream, but I leave it on the rest of the week. So if you're not within radio distance, but you have an internet provider, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com or stream.limarktech.net, and that'll give you the audio stream of the repeater's audio. And I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's at amateurradio.tv, and it has archived the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006, so please check it out. Okay, let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you when. Well, I do have a few words to say before we start the usual questions. After that segment, we'll go directly to the questions, topics, comments section. I'll ask people to hit their push to talk, give me their first name and their call sign, and whether they have a comment or a question or a topic. And hopefully the early ones will be amateur radio related, because it is an amateur radio net. But we're open to any topics of science and technology. So that should take us only to about 10:50. Paul WS2N will then join with the SpaceNet report. And that'll take us to 11 p.m., and I will return and put a bow on it and wish you all well for the week. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, my computer doesn't crash, all kinds of technical things that could possibly go wrong. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second, and I will have a couple of words before we take questions. It's grown rather common that at the top of the technical net, I tend to have something to say about artificial intelligence because it's always in the damn news. You know, it's hard to kind of get past the day where someone isn't talking about AI. This week, though, the technical breakthroughs have not been that big, at least that I've noticed. What has been is good old Elon, who we always like to talk about. He apparently has set up some kind of nuisance court case. He's suing OpenAI because way back at the beginning, when it was just a thought, a bunch of billionaires put in some, you know, $40 million apiece, and it was supposed to be a open source for the betterment of mankind. And he took them to court recently because he thinks that he was hoodwinked and that OpenAI should remain open source and give all of their intellectual property out to everyone, and to stop playing footsie with Microsoft for some reason. It's come out in discovery, of course, that good old Elon had ulterior motives. He was kind of trying to pull what he did with the founders of the Tesla car company. He put in $40 million, a bunch of other billionaires put in $40 million, and he told them that they should make this a profitable type of situation and just roll it right into Tesla, and he'd be more than happy to take majority control of OpenAI and run it like he does Tesla. So they told him to take a walk, and he took his ball and wandered away and then sued them. So that's apparently what's going on in AI last week. Who knows what'll go on in AI next week. If anyone has any comment one way or the other, please feel free. Okay, I'll take that as a polite no thank you. So that's just my little 2 cents worth. I thought I would add that to the AI fights. It's a very weird thing OpenAI did. They did start as a nonprofit organization, which gives you tax benefits, but then they opened a division that was profitable. And now they're worth, I don't know, $10, $20 billion. I've lost track. So it seems to be an interesting tax dodge at this point. It'll be interesting to see if other organizations take advantage of it. Nevertheless, that's neither here nor there. This is the Limark Technical Net, and we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
WS2IN2R1. A couple of quick minutes in the beginning of that. Back to you.
Okay, Paul recognized. Does David recognize? Anyone else want to put their name down?
This is Alpha Charlie 2, November X-ray. Just checking in. I will listen for a bit.
Alpha Delta 2, Delta Kilo, AD2DK, John.
I just wanted to say something about the AI.
Okay. I just want to clear up. We'll get to you real fast, because Paul also apparently just needs a couple of minutes. John, do you have a question or a topic tonight, or are you just checking in?
I'll comment where comment is warranted.
Okay. Anyone else who would like to sign in for tonight for any questions or comments or topics?
Let me check and see if I've got it. This is Alpha Charlie 2, November X-ray. Handle here is George, visiting Long Island, and I am just checking in, and I will listen. And if something interesting comes up, I will throw my call sign out again. AC2NX, back to net.
Okay, George, very good. Glad to have you aboard here. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
W2BG, amateur radio related.
Okay, very good, Rich. I got you down on the list. Let's kind of take it from the top. Hopefully we'll have a few more people as the night progresses. Paul, what do you want to tell us all?
Yeah, thanks, Roy. Yeah, it only takes a couple of minutes. There's a clip coming up in April 8th on a Monday. And what they plan on doing, there's a group that plans on investigating the ionosphere during that eclipse, and the idea is to get on the air, copy down contacts, signal reports, how things look maybe an hour or so before the eclipse, during the eclipse, and after the eclipse. The eclipse is going to go through the New York area, primarily upstate, is a total eclipse, but
Long Island is fine. So there's a group that's called the Ham Radio Science Citizens Investigation. It's HAMSCI, HAMSCI. And this group works with NASA and different science groups and universities. And they do studies regarding this. And there was one fellow that came on the Limelock presentation a couple of months ago. His name is Ed WX2R. He did a great presentation. In fact, you know all about this experiment that they plan on doing. They're looking for volunteers to do this. And I guess you can get on his website, which is hamsci.org/eclipse, you know. Or you could, you know, there's one fellow, Lou, and 2RQ, and he might be on frequency this evening, I'm not sure. He's going to be involved with it as well. So let me just stand by and see if Lou's out there. N2RQ, WS2N? Okay, he said he might be on. He knows I'm usually on later, so maybe he'll check in later. But anyway, he's looking for more people. So if you're looking to get involved with this group, you know, you go to our website, hamsci.org/eclipse, ECLIPSE, or you could, and eventually I'll pass this on to Lou. Lou's apparently going to be doing it with the club with Limelock. So, you know, this organization is looking for either clubs or individuals to participate. And since it's on a Sunday, not on a Sunday, it's going to be on a Monday. It's going to be not as active as last time was October 14th, I think the guy said. The last eclipse that they had out west. But that was on a weekend. In fact, I think he said that was a Saturday. But this is a Monday. And, you know, if you're off during the day, of course, that's when you eclipse happens. Solar eclipse. You'll be able to participate with this, and they're looking for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers to do this. So just stand by if anybody has any questions, and then I'll turn it right back to you, Roy. This is Paul WS2N. My email is spacenetreport@gmail.com. spacenetreport@gmail.com. If you have any other, you know, if you think of any questions later or want to participate with Limelock, I could pass that along to Lou and to RQ. Okay. Well, you know, interesting. If they plan on using, you know, naturally all HF bands, well, except for 6 meters, they plan on going from 6 meters all the way to 160, and they're going to go with CW, single sideband, FT4, FT8, and anyway, they have a lot of information regarding this topic. If you go to Ed WX2R, he's they had a name for it, what he is. wrote it down here somewhere. Anyway, he's in charge of that group doing this. He did a great presentation, and you can actually see the presentation if you go to limelock.org and bring up the YouTube and you look up the eclipse topic. About a 1 hour presentation. Very well done. On and on and on, all kinds of charts and things. So I found that interesting. I saw it live, and you could also watch it all over again. Anyway, I'm going to turn it back to you, Roy. Thanks for the time. And we'll be listening, I'm sure. AC2GS, WS2N.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, Paul. I'm sure that the topic will be brought up later tonight, maybe when Lou is listening. And you might have an opportunity to tell people again. So that's very good. Thank you, Paul. David, you wanted to respond to the topic of artificial intelligence. Please do.
Thank you, Roy. I remember reading that Elon Musk offered open source $5 billion to change their name to closed source.
I think that's Elon just being Elon. Most of the time he's able to squirm out of his smart little comments. The last time he couldn't, he had to buy Twitter.
Well, you know, how to say? There's a lot going on over there. I don't really know much about it, and I would say that if there's money to be made there, I'm sure that these people are all interested for that. So, how to do that and stay ethical, I don't know.
Well, I think the problem is how much money you want to make. You could make money and still be pretty ethical. You probably can't make billions of dollars and be incredibly ethical. So, yeah, who knows? I'm waiting to hear about a cereal box that says AI on it. Because, I mean, I think they've been using AI for just about every other thing. It's sort of like what nanoparticles were about 10, 15 years ago. Everyone and their brother was selling things that had the magic of nanoparticles. So now everyone's going to push artificial intelligence, even on a cereal box eventually. You'll see.
You know, it's the same, you know, what all of this is leading to. And I guess I'm a little bit nervous about it. And in terms of movies and photography, somehow made an impression there. And I guess if you know what you're doing, you can be very excellent with AI. But I guess the other thing is, you know, AI in the wrong hands can be very bad.
Well, yes. I mean, any tool can be misused or used for evil purposes. My go-to comment is, you can take a hammer and you can build a house. You could also bash the skull of your neighbor in. So the same is true of almost any tool. I am unaware of any tool that cannot not be misused as well as used for the betterment or the detriment of mankind. So this is just another tool that society is going to have to figure out how to deal with. In the old days, you could sort of believe what you saw and you heard, but as future unrolls, it looks like that will no longer be the case. It will be able to be simulated in a way that's perfect enough for mere mortals not to recognize it. I can still kind of recognize AI images and videos, but you have to look very closely at the details, especially at people's fingers. AI has a tendency to misnumber fingers. You'll have human beings with four fingers or six fingers or sometimes seven or eight. And there are other little tricks that you could figure out how it goes wrong. But eventually they won't go wrong, and they'll, you know, I don't know how we'll deal with that as a society.
Well, I think sort of like this idea of approaching AI, you know, features in software that allow for you to do certain kinds of things. For example, GarageBand in Apple computers and GarageBand, you start with a guitar track, start with a vocal track, you start with a bass track, and then you put the drums in. And the software creates the drums using the tracks that already existed there, you know?
AC2GS. Yes, I'm familiar with GarageBand. The problem is we're getting to a point where it's not going to be able to accompany us. It's going to take over us. You'll just have to type that you want a jazzy melody in a certain, I don't know enough about music to kind of say, you know, 4/5 time and a couple other little descriptive terms, and it'll just generate it on the fly with very little input from the programmer or the guy using the application. So, you know, I mean, that was the problem a couple weeks ago with this Charlie Wonka's chocolate experience, where the guy just kind of typed in a couple of premises and generated images and generated a complete script that didn't mean anything much. It was gibberish, but nevertheless, it looked like a legitimate script just superficially. So, you know, software has slowly, progressively been able to accompany us, but soon it's just going to be able to take over the whole damn job. So that's going to be worrisome.
QSL Roy, well, if it isn't great now, and there isn't so much material out there that's really, really interesting, really useful, you know, AI will only imitate what's out there now. You know, according to what is known and what is universally accepted. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, these artificial intelligence, generative AI, uses models and garbage in, garbage out type of thing. There's a theory among AI people that eventually the Internet will be flooded with so much inane AI output that people won't realize that they're using it as the input to model future models. And so it'll degenerate into a completely gelatinous mass eventually. AI will be feeble-minded as they pour more instances of AI itself back into the model generation. So that'll be interesting to see if that actually happens. It's an interesting Ouroboros. You know, the image of the snake eating its tail.
Yes, like how virtuously we had begun, and then, you know, all kinds of things are wreaking havoc, you know.
Well, that's the nature of life, you know. We're always trying to get back into balance because entropy always increases and we always fall out of balance. So it'll be interesting to see what humanity does with these new challenges.
Also, if we are somehow inundated with AI material and AI possibilities and AI this and that, you know, what happened before AI and all the analog type music and videos and photography and stuff, you know, would have much bigger value, you know, because it was done with the hands of human beings, you know.
Well, that depends on the human being. Sometimes human beings don't value things that should be valued. And I don't know, I tend to be smack silly with artificial intelligence. Google has decided that when you do a Google search, at the very top of the Google search is a AI-generated answer. I found that the answer is about 60% incredibly wrong, but it's at the top of the page. So I tend to almost reflexively just kind of scroll down below it and go and look for the individual links, which are also wrong because Google has decided to promote sponsored links. So if you type in something about a Dell computer, its first link will give you something like an Apple computer. And they'll give you kind of similar things, but not what you wanted. So Google has seen better days. There's already a lot of talk on the Internet of finding a legitimate successor as a the best type of a Google search engine. Unfortunately, the other search engines are trying to monetize their property as well. That's the big problem. Originally, when the Internet was young, the drive was to get eyes. Now that they feel that they've gotten a lot of eyes, they want to get their wallets. That's where it gets to be troublesome.
QSL, Roy. Well, you know, you can pay $1,300 for an iPhone 15 Pro Max. You can pay $120 a month for your service, you know. Or you could look around, see what's out there, get something more useful for your money. I think that there's a lot of hype too, you know. And it will probably become less important, you know, if they don't try to give it a lot of hype so that people would buy into it. You know, otherwise it wouldn't really have much value for people who are developing it.
AC2GS. Well, it depends. Some things, some new technology is very useful. Some technology are just gadgets and gizmos and things that bored people want to play with for a while. Those visors that Apple is selling for $3,500, a percentage of the people who bought in on it, you know, returned it for a refund, you know, before that option expired. Advertising is a intriguing psychological thing. It's primarily based on how human beings perceive value, and it's very effective and it's very profitable, because if you can advertise some obscure similar thing than everything else and make it the next craze, like those services that women apparently are buying as many as they possibly can for collections and putting them on the shelf. If you can somehow talk people into acting somewhat irrationally and profiting your company, then you're going to get a big bonus at the end of the year. So advertising has its place, theoretically, to let people be aware of things that they're unaware of that might make their lives easier. Unfortunately, like all things, it's been distorted and contorted to make you want things that you probably don't really want. But they make you believe it long enough to pay for it.
QSL. Well, you know, a person has to know what he or she wants. You know, most people, they don't know what they want. They hardly ever get what they want. You know, the $1,300 iPhone, you can buy a Sonim XP7 used for $57 on eBay. What a great phone, you know. Talk and text, FM broadcast, music player, and a battery that's, like, huge, you know. And there's no hype in that.
No, there's no hype, because it's old technology, there's nothing to hype in it. I get a little bit of a pain when I occasionally, once every 4 or 5 years, upgrade my iPhone. But I'm very happy with my iPhone. I feel it does a lot of things, and I take advantage of a lot of things that it does that an old, out-of-date Android clone would not be capable of doing. But, you know, different strokes for different folks, you know. Is there someone who wants to make some comment about this? Okay, I guess not. Anyway, David, it depends on the individual. If you can afford something with a little bit extra feature set and you actually use the feature sets, I don't have anything terribly against them. If a simpler solution will do, then so be it. Different strokes for different folks. As long as no one's knocking on my door asking me to pay for their iPhone, have fun with it. What the hell? If they want to wear those $3,500 goggles that look semi-ridiculous, again, as long as they don't ask me to give them a piece of that $3,500, you know, have fun.
Yeah, I think that Apple stay in the computer business because they make great computers, and I've used them for so many years. But, you know, the $57 phone, you know, it's on 4 days, 5 days without needing to charge. And people call me. They call me. I don't have to call them. I don't have to look at emails and texts on my phone. So, like, the simpler life, I come home, I turn the computer on, and then I look at all that stuff there.
Well, you know, if you, my guess would be if you talk to anyone, say, under the age of 35, you will find that most people, most of them, have a cell phone, occasionally two, and for the most part, they don't use the phone of the cell phone. They send texts. Younger people tend to not particularly like talking on phones. That's a generalization, and you could always find a case where that isn't the case. But generally speaking, the average younger person is much happier sending texts. They're not even that big about email. They like SMS, you know, text messaging and applications and social applications where they can snap pictures or videos and other stuff on their phone. So, again, whatever suits you. If you just want to use a cell phone as a phone, talking to another person on another phone, and the lack of feature sets doesn't bother you, then that's great. If that isn't the case, then you got to go with something a little bit more expensive and up-to-date silicon and such. That tends to cost more money because, you know, they buy it at TSMC, you know, sells high-precision silicon fabrication chips, and there's premium to that, so you have to pay the premiums and such. But, you know, again, everyone to their own.
Yeah, so I see people texting behind the wheel when they're driving a car. I see people with a cell phone in their nose, you know. In every restaurant and cafe, the cell phones are out. Children are texting each other back and forth from one side of the classroom to the other. You know, they go to family gatherings and they're texting, you know. So, how to say, we've been sold, and, you know, maybe there's something else, you know, like we were saying before about AI, you know, AI might just fizzle out if there isn't enough activity, enough sales, etc., you know, if people realize that, you know, life could be better, you know, with these devices used differently, you know.
Well, we kind of touched on this a few times in the last month or two. There are some times where advertising can manipulate people completely and change behaviors. A lot of times, though, they can't. They can modify it. They could focus it on some aspect or other. And then sometimes people go along with it, and other times they just don't. If advertising was the ultimate weapon of mankind's brain, then, you know, New Coke, New Pepsi, New Coke? Yeah, New Coke, would have been a thing. They promoted it, they spent a lot of money on it, and it failed, and they went back to the classic Coke and such. And so, you know, advertising tries, marketing tries, companies try. Some things break through, some things don't. And I don't know, I think it's just the modern generation is a lot more comfortable, for whatever reason, with short, pithy texts and such than to have a phone conversation with each other. And that's why you see people checking out the text messages and such. And yeah, it's dangerous when you do it in the car, but it's dangerous if you're going to have a cell phone conversation in the car, too. You know, the cops aren't going to like either of that.
Good, so. No, I don't drive. If I have a conversation, I'm walking down the street, and maybe I have a pair of headphones on so I could hear better. I talk into the microphone. Sonom XP7, military grade, rugged phone. It has an antenna on it for extended reach, solid glass and a huge battery and great sound for FM broadcast, which none of the other phones have, and music player, which is just like MP3s and WAV files. Yeah, it sounds pretty good, I guess.
AC2GS. Okay, David, yeah, what can I tell you? I hope you get a lot of value out of that phone of yours. For some people, that's exactly what they need. And for other people, they're looking for something a little different. So, what can I tell you?
A comment?
Certainly.
Yeah, this is WA2BDH. I just wanted to comment on the case of the new Coke that you just mentioned earlier. I consider they were fairly humble, Coca-Cola Company was fairly humble into realizing that the new Coke wasn't working, and they didn't try to force it down your throat. I can see some examples now where they are trying to force changes down your throat. One of the things I noticed a few years ago, I haven't seen it on the market yet, but they were in some of the newer microwave ovens. They were talking about eliminating the plain and simple rotating platform to avoid the cold spots, and instead they were going to do the far more complex sweeping of the magnetron frequency to cause the cold, hot and cold spots to move around. Now, this is what I call spurious technology. A nice simple solution of a rotating platform, no high-tech stuff, and now they've got to replace it with something far more complex to accomplish the same thing.
Well, that's a good point, John. But, with microwaves, there's a whole different type of dynamic with appliances than with soft drinks. Soft drinks, you kind of have an immediate effect on the entire population because most people don't store up their soft drinks. Buying a soft drink is in some cases a daily process and in others a weekly process, whereas the next time I'm going to buy a microwave, hopefully, is going to be 5 years from now. So it's a little bit easier to kind of hunker down and say I'm right when everything is crumbling around you, because it takes 5 years for it to crumble. With Coke or Pepsi, if people don't like their main product, their stock plummets in about an hour and a half. So, they're sane individuals. They had a bright idea. They saw it failing miserably. They saw their stock crumbling miserably, and they pulled the eject button.
But what is it that makes a corporation feel that they have to change something that is working fine? Like you get new people in there, and we simply must replace what we've been doing for years that's working good with something different. Why can't they leave well enough alone?
KG2RY.
Yes, David recognized. I'll get to you in a second. You said the magic words, John. New guys come on. So you got new guys coming on, and it really, no one's going to be amazed at them if they just keep doing what the last guy did. They have to make it better. So there's this uncontrollable desire among humanity to put their footprint or palm print on everything and anything. So as much as it makes sense to you and I, don't screw up a good thing, people screw up a good thing almost all the time because they're trying to put their own imprint and they're trying to do even better than the last guy. David, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. Going back to what we were talking about, Sonom XP7, talk and text, with an antenna on it. It makes me think for $57, for me, it's sort of like having an Anytone ATD878UV. And to be able to talk to people with a politeness and a protocol. Sort of like ham radio, where, people then meet each other maybe for the first time on the air.
and have a very nice conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a little confused. Your cell phone is a cell phone, right? So you have to dial people. So unless you randomly dial people, you're going to end up talking to people that you already know. Right, David?
I guess, but, you know, I tell my friends, I tell people, you know, if you want to get in touch, just call me. And on this number, and the carrier gives me talk and text for $20 a month, talk and text with extended reach. And what to say, they also gave me a really great phone number, so I'm using this, it's like a walkie-talkie phone, where, you know, it's used kind of like a ham radio, you know?
That was a popular feature for about an hour and a half about 15 years ago. I forget exactly which carrier had it, but they had kind of push-to-talk walkie-talkies to you could connect it to a friend, and it would go through the cell lines, but it was more of a handy talkie type of situation. Well, yeah, I mean, David, it sounds like you're doing a heck of an advertisement for this product. We're not commercial out here. We're not trying to sell anyone anything, and I appreciate your experiences with your phone. Just to touch back on John, and any comments with what I was saying about why I think microwave manufacturers are able to get away with stupid ideas better than soft drink manufacturers?
Roy, I see your point. There's more of an immediate feedback. But I guess what really irks me is, and I've seen it in so many other things, is the introduction of what I call spurious technology. Stuff is done just because it can be done. I'll give you another quick point, and then I'll let you get back to the other gentleman. We have an old Maytag washer dryer. Got it back in the mid-80s. It's still going strong. Thing is built like a brick, house, and still working fine. We bought a new washer dryer, again Maytag, for a different location a couple of months ago. It's working fine, but there's so many little spurious things, such as rotate the clothes slightly before it adds more water, wet down the clothes completely, a whole lot of spurious little things that don't amount to a hill of beans and don't necessarily make the cleaning process any better. It just adds more lines of code to the ROM that drives the microprocessor in there, as all it seems to do. So this spurious technology, doing more stuff just to do more stuff, is what gets me riled up. I better turn it over to you before I start using some Carlinian words. Okay?
Roy, I just want to say, you can't buy one, so I'm not selling anything.
Okay, I was being tongue-in-cheek, David. Anyway, getting back to appliances. Appliances is another problem I see with the world. Up until a point, there were a lot more appliance manufacturers. Over the years, big appliance manufacturers bought up other big appliance manufacturers to the point where I think there's only about three of them left. And they all, as you, John, mentioned, they go feature crazy because I guess marketing likes that and it adds to the ad copy and they think that that helps their product. They've also put in a heck of a lot of failure points to appliances. It's rather well known in the industry that prior to about 2005, most appliances lasted a relatively long time. If you ask people about their appliances before then, they're going strong, in some cases 30 years. If you buy something to 2010, you're lucky if you got it working for about 7 or 8 years. I mean, I don't want to go back to the good old days. Dick K2RIW
had a couple of technical mess where he talked about his refrigerator and getting a gasket for his refrigerator. I don't particularly want to do that tonight, but my refrigerator is about 24 years old, and it's going strong. My sister bought a newer one. It's been about 7 or 8 years, and that lasted 7 or 8 years, and she's on a third one. So appliances are infamous for failure rate. You can say that it just is happening. You could say that it's a scheme from the manufacturers, faster turnover of cheaper manufactured products. Who knows? But it is an ongoing problem with appliances that I'm well aware of.
Yeah, right. That's true,
right? Yeah, and it's a shame, and there's no way to get around it. I watch a whole bunch of YouTubes of people who repair these appliances for a living, and they say, and I think it's quite honestly, it's not like you could, in the old days, they could give you a brand name, and that brand name was better than others. Nowadays, they can't even give you a brand name. Occasionally, they can give you a model in a particular brand, and that seems to have less problems than others. But there's no manufacturer that strives for a high-quality, long-lasting appliance. If it happens, it's kind of accidental, unfortunately.
But, you know, it seems like part of the problem is that the microprocessor that does that controls the appliance, the ROM has so much space in it, it just has to fill it up with stuff to make it do something. Maybe if they were restricted to smaller ROMs, they wouldn't have to give it to many of these spurious features that really do nothing. Anyway, I appreciate the discussion, Roy. I guess you want to move on.
Yeah, I just want to point out, fortunately or unfortunately, memory is dirt cheap. And software engineers occasionally like to show off. So, yeah, it's a little too much featureitis, a lot of things. You know, every year I've been seeing, especially Korean companies, they really want to put a computer monitor on your refrigerator. They want to put a camera in your refrigerator so it can take snapshots of what's in your refrigerator to remind you of what's missing. Like, you can't open up the door and look in. But, again, this is a curious aspect to Korean appliance manufacturers. They keep on doing it, and eventually I guess they're going to wear us down where there's going to be a law requiring a monitor on the cover of all of our refrigerators. Anyway, that was fun. Let's move on to our next person, Rich, W2BZ. What's your question or your comment for tonight, Rich?
Yeah, it's about takeoff angles of antennas. What dictates the takeoff angle of an antenna?
The design of the antenna. A quarter wave vertical with radials has a different takeoff angle than a 5/8 wave. That's why I kind of like my 10-meter 5/8 wave because the electrodynamics, if you insert it into the computer simulations, it'll demonstrate the radiation pattern in space and the contours, and it will have a different takeoff angle. So it's primarily the physics of electromagnetic waves interacting with different radiating antenna designs.
Well, that was a mouthful, that last sentence. That's what I'm after. What about the put power into an antenna, and it would seem on the surface if I didn't know that a vertical would have a nearly direct up, because it's vertical, right? Takeoff angle. So what exactly determines, I know it's the characteristic of an antenna that determines the takeoff angle, but what if, I'm asking about the characteristics of an antenna that dictates the takeoff angle. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, again, it kind of is a,
That's a very, very complicated question, really. In point of fact, a vertical quarter wave antenna does not go straight up. It is not a near vertical incident skyway. That's what, when we say near vertical incident skyway, that's a very fancy way for saying it goes straight up. And that's not what a quarter wave ground plane antenna does. Long ago, we talked about how a quarter wave ground plane antenna is a kind of trick of physics. It's you're using the radials as a kind of mirror to have an imaginary dipole on the other side of that quarter wave. So there's a real quarter wave, and the radials project a reflection of another quarter wave. So it's like a center-fed dipole that's vertically oriented. And we've talked about how the radiation pattern for a center-fed dipole is kind of donut-shaped. So if you take the donut and you move it off the edge into the where the circle is, it's going omnidirectional. That's why a quarter wave ground plane vertical has a radiation pattern that's kind of like a donut going out to the right, left, east, west, north, and south, all over the darn place. So it's not going up. It's going kind of at a 90-degree angle, give or take, depending upon how it's positioned close to the ground, whether there's a reflection, there's no reflection, or you know, what you're doing with it. You can kind of tweak the radials and adjust the pattern slightly. But the pattern is not going straight up. The pattern is going out on the horizontal, which is where you want it to go.
WB2EAP.
Yes, Ed.
Letting you know I'm here if you're getting tired out with that.
Okay, one of the joys of this hobby is I never find myself going terribly tired about antenna theory. I kind of like it.
Can I try to summarize about the quarter wave vertical?
Certainly.
A quarter wave vertical antenna mounted on a flat, infinitely sized, fully conducting ground plane at the takeoff angle of about 30 degrees. Now, you can play games with that by, instead of this infinite flat conducted ground plane, if you use radials, and you can bend the radials down if you want to lower the takeoff angle, but that also affects the SWR, so it's kind of like a trade-off. You know, anything you change changes everything else. Does that answer any questions?
AG2R1.
Yes, David?
I have a question. On a military-grade talk and text phone, there is an antenna, very small antenna, on the upper right-hand side. What is that? And for 4G LTE communication, how big would a quarter wave of that be?
I think that's veering off of the topic. If you want to, you can come back after we're done with Rich's question and ask those things. But I'd like to kind of keep on topic, because what I think Rich is trying to understand is what makes this takeoff angle. And I'd like to kind of stick on that for the time being. And also, thanks to Ed for his input and discussing it. I think the trick is, we don't usually think of antennas for some reason as three-dimensional objects. We kind of look at the gain of a Yagi as a two-dimensional pattern, because that's how it's presented to us on a page, because pages are two-dimensional. So the trick is that radiation patterns are not two-dimensional, they're three-dimensional. And the aspect that they're going elevating in the Y plane, if you will, is the takeoff angle. You know, there's the X and the Z. That's where it's positioned. But it could be going up. It could be going down. It could be going straight up if it's a near vertical incident skyway. So I think that's another thing to keep in mind. that we're really talking about all computers have radiation patterns in three dimensions.
I just thought of something else.
Certainly, Ed.
Let us consider the previously mentioned quarter-wave vertical above an infinite flat fully conducting ground plane. I believe what happens is the takeoff angle is determined by the reflection off of the ground plane. And then when you get a reflection off the ground plane and you see at what angle does the phase difference between a straight line out from the radiating element and the reflection is equal to 360-degree phase shift, that is where you get the peak of the angle, which is an interference pattern having to do with cancellation or addition of the signals by phase shift with the reflection. And that seems to work out when you do a mathematical analysis to somewhere around 20 to 30 degrees. Now, keep in mind, this is a very broad peak. It's not a precise peak with that simple antenna. A galaxy, on the other hand, focuses the energy towards the horizon. And any kind of a takeoff angle is, again, dependent on the surrounding terrain and reflections where you get the phases adding. I'm sorry if you're on a loop too far down the rabbit hole there, Roy.
AC2GS. No, it's okay, Ed. I just want to explain to people that this is not really simple stuff. This is why there's things like Easy NEC, there are expensive antenna simulation software to take currents along a radiating wire and chop them into infinite numbers in order to calculate how the electromagnetic waves radiate off of them in three dimensions. So this that sounded a little complicated is actually a simplification of what really is going on there. So I thank you, Ed, and I'm always happy to go a little bit deep into the weeds, but ultimately you have to kind of take apart how each and every model antenna. And not only the models, but it changes according to the resonant frequencies, how far you're off of them, or if you're into a harmonic and you're into a multi-node type of a situation. And as Ed mentioned, it has to do with how close you are to the ground and how much you're ground coupled and what condition the ground is and what condition the environment is and what condition the basic topography of the surrounding ground is. So it's a very complex thing. Even antenna modeling just kind of gives you a rough idea of what's going on. You have to basically string your antenna up and see for yourself how well it functions for your purposes.
What's the takeoff angle of a long wire versus a dipole versus a Yagi? Do you know that, Roy?
It's all over. That's donut.
Yeah, I mean, there's a theoretical radiation pattern, and then there's the actual one, which can be very, very different. You know, again, when we talk about a center-fed dipole, we talk about that donut, and that donut is true for some conditions. If you model it on most antenna simulation software, you get that lovely donut exactly when your center-fed dipole is a half of a wavelength above a nominal ground. As you raise it, that donut gets distorted. As you lower it, that donut gets real distorted. As you lower it closer and closer to the ground, that donut becomes a very, very strong peak at 90 degrees right up at the sky. So about a year ago, someone was talking about how they could only put a center-fed dipole a couple of feet above the ground. And I said, well, that's a near vertical incident sky wave. You're basically warming up the clouds above you. It's very good for local communications. It's terrible for DXing.
That was me, Roy, and I wrote 9A with that antenna.
Ah, very good.
just a minor correction, I believe.
Feel free.
That donut pattern is without the round. It is a dipole floating in infinite space. Once you add a round, now you have a world of mirrors, and the patterns are perturbed by reflections off of round. Now keep in mind, a real world round is not a flat...